Brackles are taken now. Well, no, I guess there could be more than one topic related to black holes. So how did I go about this? Yeah. Okay, black holes are cool. Let's do black holes. So any questions from last time? Okay.
Should we consider the idea of the natural unit system since the beginning?
I don't remember, does it say or not? I mean, if
it says it's the third question.
Okay.
First answer,
right. I think that's right. Yeah, I think it's all natural units. That makes sense.
Also, when you define the gravitational prime structure, you have it the gmv squared.
Proton mass squared, yeah.
Is it the Planck mass or the?
Proton mass.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was defined with respect to the electron mass.
I guess that's defined in that paper. I mean, I don't think there's necessarily a standard definition for alpha g, but yeah, I guess in that particular problem is the proton mass. Yeah, Planck mass wouldn't make sense because then that would be one.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Also, for the third question, when you asked about the time that the photon takes to escape from the center of the sun and the luminosity and everything, should we is there a result that we should get to, or because you can stop the calculation whenever you want.
Is there
results? Especially for the luminosity, yeah.
Right. So what is the question? The question is find the luminosity?
The typical luminosity of a star.
All right. So you get the typical mass, right,
mm-hmm.
first, and then you want to get a typical luminosity. So that's, that's just the number, right? Or you can express it in terms of fundamental constants because you got a mass in terms of fundamental constants. So you get a luminosity in terms of fundamental constants. I'm trying to remember. I don't think actually I have the solutions written down somewhere. I have to remember this. I think the important part is that how different things scale with each other. That's one thing. I think there's the particular scaling between luminosity, temperature, and mass. Which is known as main sequence. So if I remember correctly, the purpose of this problem was for you to derive main sequence. What is it? Yeah. And main sequence is just to say that if you know the mass of a star is burning hydrogen and it's in a steady state, then all the other parameters can be described in terms of its mass. Okay? Okay. Right. So I actually went through this kind of question I was doing on the board. I'm not sure why I thought it was incorrect. Well, I guess I have that here. So it was correct. Everything I was on the board was correct. I think there was a minus sign that was wrong, which was, I think I was writing, here it was. I was writing mu e plus mu p equals mu h. This is minus e naught, not plus e naught. So that was the only thing that was wrong. But I think everything else was correct the way I derived, and it gets the right answer. And this E naught is the ionization energy of electron. So that was, right. So that was, so that's the Saha equation, and we derived it, and I guess I can just write it down again for you. So the reason I was confused was, Saha equation was Ne times Np divided by Nh is electron kBT divided by 2 pi h bar squared to the power of 3/2 e to the minus e naught divided by kT. So I guess the reason I was confused that this h bar was outside this parenthesis is h bar cubed, but when you bring it inside, it becomes h bar squared. So that was because h bar cubed, that was the same h bar that goes into the phase space density definition. So I think, that's why I got confused about this h bar. But this is the correct formula, and there was a minus sign here. So that's, so basically, this is the same combination that appears in the Boltzmann distribution is energy minus mu. So the point is that the sum of those, if you have a reaction, should be constant energy. So right, so mu minus e should be, the sum of mu minus e is on the two sides should be constant. Anyway, so that's a derivation of so that's Saha equation. So there wasn't really any mistake there except for the sign, and you could see that at temperatures that are low, you have this Boltzmann suppression. So the ionized particles and electrons are exponentially suppressed, but then as you go to high temperatures, then this becomes, the number becomes large. And this thing is the phase space density. Remember, the main idea in quantum mechanics is that in statistical mechanics is that phase space density is given by the Bose-Einstein or distribution or Fermi-Dirac distribution. But then if you're looking at the total numbers, you have to integrate over momenta. And this is the integral over momentum for the thermal distribution. So that's why you have this T. And I think the interpretation of this is the one thing to have in mind is you might have something as exponentially suppressed. But then if there's a lot of phase space that prefers it, then that may still happen. For example, in the early universe, when the universe is cooling down, even though the ionization energy is 13.6 electron volts, the universe, in fact, recombines the electrons and protons actually combine to make hydrogen when temperature is something like 0.1 electron volt, much colder. So there is this exponential suppression by e to the minus 100 or so, but it turns out that this is very big, this temperature or this particular ratio is big. So even though, is there an easy reason? Did I write this correct? Yeah, so in particular, if you're interested in the ionization ratio, so x is, let's say, is Ne divided by Nh. And I guess these are the same if you have charge neutrality. So this says that Xe, which is Xe squared, divided by, with this definition, is 1 over nh, is proportional to, let's say, 1 over nh, t to the 3 halves, e to the minus e naught over kt. Right. And then there's me here. Me to the 3 halves. So it turns out that for cosmic densities, the number density of hydrogen is small. So in fact, this ratio is very big. And there are many more photons that there are hydrogen atoms. And then there are, this is another factor that's big because Me is much bigger than, well, temperature. So this is roughly speaking is Me divided by T to the power of 3 halves times T cubed divided by nh. So this is the number density of photons divided by number density of, T cubed is the number density of photons. So it, as it turns out, in our universe, we have 10 orders of magnitude, 10 times more photons than we have particles, 10 to the 10 times more photons than we have particles, and Me is much bigger than T at late times because this is mass of electron, is 5 MeV. Mega electron volt. This is less than an electron volt. So this happens to be big. So in fact, the universe doesn't recombine until temperature is much lower. So this is something to have in mind, is that it's not just energies, and this is the lesson of thermodynamics, the phase space or entropy and energy. So this is the contribution from entropy or phase space, how much volume there is, and this is the energetic contribution. So that's something you can see in the Saha equation. Okay, so that's good. We got that covered. Any questions? And on to the discussion of, so that was lecture 4, lecture 5 to 6. Right. To do. Good, this is in view mode. One thing I forgot to mention, so our Friday meeting, that will be tomorrow. I think the first two ones, and I sent you an email about the first two, where are going to be in this space room, and then the rest of them are going to be in Alice room. Good. Perfect. So I know it's confusing, but I guess since we switched late, then it wasn't easy to find one place. And I guess the other thing, we wanted to be able to record this. Okay, so we discussed, so going back to radiation, radiative transfer, we discussed A and B coefficients. We discussed how there is a relationship between absorption and emission, which is given by a statistical equilibrium. So if you want to have your material to be in thermal equilibrium, or to be able to be in thermal equilibrium with your light, then they should be able to maintain the same temperature in equilibrium. And that puts a constraint on how that material interacts with light. In particular, it tells you that the rate of emission, so it was emission, what we call J nu, it's going to be proportional to 1 plus n gamma times, well, then there is some coefficient which you can call it, did we call it A or B? Call it A. And then the rate of absorption is proportional to n gamma times A. And the ratio is this ratio. And I guess, and we discussed that if you want light to be this n gamma, these photons to be in thermal equilibrium with the stuff that's doing the emission and absorption, then well, you have to have this particular form if n gamma is the Planck spectrum, which is e to the e over t minus 1, and you have some atom with two states, 1 and 2, where n2 divided by n1 is e to the minus e2 minus e1 divided by kT. So this is known as, this one here is known as a spontaneous emission. A spontaneous emission. And this is induced induced emission. So did I do this everything? Right, right. So a spontaneous emission and induced emission. What else do I have to say? And so this is, so at large, if you have a classical light, that if n gamma is very big, you have a classical electromagnetic field. So basically what it's saying is that you have a classical electromagnetic field that's oscillating, and that causes the whatever your material is it, to have an oscillating dipole, and that causes emission. Right. And of course, and that emission is responsible for absorption as well, because if you have this classical electromagnetic field, which is causing the dipoles to oscillate, then it should lose its energy, right? Because it's these dipoles that start oscillating and emitting light. Okay. So the energy should come out of somewhere that comes out of electromagnetic field. So that's basically the meaning of, that's essentially energy conservation and why these two are the same, at least in the classical limit. That the same thing that is responsible for emission is also responsible for absorption of the incident light. Right. Good. And I wanted to say, okay, so the definition of this A is, I have it somewhere here. Okay, so, right, okay, good. So A is equal to 4 pi squared, and this is just convention, Q squared over MC. and this 2 nu squared over c squared f12. So f12 is known as the oscillator strength. And this is equivalent to basically saying that the cross section for absorption, this is the cross section, is pi q squared over mc f12, and this is delta of nu minus nu 12. So this is the cross section of basically absorption of, I guess, going from 1 to 2, let's say, I mean, in that case. So these are just, I mean, these are equivalent definitions. If you just use the standard definition of cross section that we have, and then this is the number density of incident photons, or the occupation number of incident photons, then, I mean, if you remember the definition of A, I can remind you about the definition of this. Di nu by dl is j nu minus alpha I nu. And this term for absorption is just n sigma, it's n sigma, just n sigma, actually, that's what it is. So it's a number density of absorption times this sigma 1, 2. Right. And A is the absorption per, so A is just the definition of A. I guess I didn't define A anywhere. But it could be, so the rate of dp by dt of emission or absorption for a part, for a single atom is just A. Is that right? I'm missing something here. Well, okay, so no, it's B times I nu, and B, A and B are related by this relationship that we had, which is, sorry, B and A are just proportional to each other. B over A is 2h nu cubed divided by c squared. So L is length. So if your light is traveling through the medium, right, then this is the rate at which it's absorbed. This is the rate at which it's emitted. And the part of it that depends on the intensity, both emission and absorption, because energy is conserved. So the amount that is emitted, is absorbed, is going to be re-emitted in other directions. It's proportional to I nu, and B and A are just proportional to each other up to some. This is just historical notation. B and A, you should think of them as the same thing, up to some normalization. So what's the point? What am I doing here? So what I'm doing is, right, so this is for a single absorber, single atom. So what I'm doing here is just this is generally true for everything. Now I'm thinking as my medium made out of a bunch of particles, a bunch of atoms in particular, and then the properties of that atom can be described if it has a single transition list. Of course, it could have multiple lines. But for one particular transition, there is one number that matters, which is what appears in front of this delta function, and it's essentially the cross section. So the photons that don't have the right frequency, they just pass through. The photons that have the right frequency would be absorbed and then re-emitted with this rate. Right. So this F12 quantifies that. And the reason it's written in this way is if you remember, we discussed this the first week of the class. This is dimensionless. So if you just think of a dipole that's oscillating, and its size is, I guess this M is M of electron. and its size is 1/ME, or if size of the size of an atom, hydrogen atom, basically. If you think of a hydrogen atom, this is the typical size of a hydrogen atom, and the dipole of a hydrogen atom-sized object would be about of this order, and so this would be the cross section you expect. Now, if you have you could have transitions that are much more suppressed than that because the typical dipole is smaller. For example, we discussed the hyperfine transitions, and what was the other one? Right, the hyper. Yeah, I think finer structure. I think it's called fine hyperfine transition and fine transition. I don't think it's called fine transition, but yeah. So there's a finer structure and hyperfine structure. And those are suppressed by higher powers of alpha or mu over mp. That means that this F1 would be, this F would be smaller for those guys. So the typical atomic transition has this F of order 1. But then if you have the forbidden, so-called forbidden transition, transitions that are that have particularly a small dipole for some symmetry reasons, then this F would be smaller for them. And you can also imagine that this is related to the width of the line, as we're going to discuss in a little bit. So the smaller the value of F, the narrower the line is, because the longer it takes for the transition to happen. Okay.
And you wanted to talk about radiation and
right, exactly. Of course, integrating over the delta function just gives you 1, so that's easy. Right, so for this particular transition.
But you don't have to.
Right, so. Okay, so it depends on what you want to do. If you're interested in how much energy is absorbed, the energy is only absorbed at this frequency for this, if you just have this transition. So the integral over I nu is. So you have the incident I nu, and then you have the absorbed and re-emitted I nu. So the absorbed and re-emitted I nu just going to be in this frequency, right? And right, so that's responsible for a spectral line. So what happens is that you have an I nu. If you look at the, so in this case, what happens is, and this is the so-called Kirchhoff's law. You have I nu that's coming in. There's a stuff that's scattered, and there's stuff that goes through. And of course, the stuff that's get out of the incident line of sight is scattered. So what you get in this direction is whatever your here you had your original I nu versus nu, let's say. Here, you get an absorption. At some point, and here you get an emission, where this is at nu 1/2. So the same profile that you get here for emission is going to be here for absorption. Well, but we're not talking about intensity of a single frequency. So this is the cross section.
Okay. Like
right. So this guy would have a delta function, right? Of course, as we're going to discuss, it's not really a delta function. It has a width, and the width has to do with what f is. So the smaller f, the narrower it is. But for as we discussed the first week, for all typical transitions, these are really really narrow. So it's like goes from 10 to the minus 6 of the frequency to 10 to the minus, God knows, much, much smaller. So these are very narrow transitions, very close to delta function. OK, so let's do the a bunch of simple radiative transfer processes. So I want to do, so let's see. So my agenda is today. I want to do Thomson cross section or Thomson scattering. I want to do Compton, let's see. So Thompson harmonic oscillator. I want to talk about Compton scattering. And let's see what else I have here. And so I don't actually have too much. Then I have radiation drag force. Okay, so that's all I've got for today. Okay. So let's start from Thompson scattering. So any questions so far? So I'm gonna basically derive for you where this F12 comes from. So that has to do with this harmonic oscillator description of oscillator description. So the simplest think of a scattering that you can imagine is if you have an incident light. It's an oscillating electric field. So I guess it's a photon, but it's not really a single. It could be lots of photons. So you have an oscillating electric field, and you could say E is E naught, or E hat times E to the minus omega I omega t. And it hits an electron. So you have MEX double dot is Q times E. And then you have radiation, as we discussed. There is a magic formula, which is what? For radiation of a charge object. Q squared. What else? A squared over CQ. And there was a factor here, which was 2/3. Good. So that's the magic formula. Good. So here I'm going to do it a little bit more detail. So this is the total energy. But if you want the energy, the distribution of energy in different directions. So this is just dE by dt. So dE by dt by d omega is given by, and it's actually very simple. I mean, to go from one to the other, just using very simple argument. It's q squared over 4 pi c cubed. So this is acceleration. It's the same acceleration cross n hat squared, where n hat is the line of sight. Let's say this is the line of sight. This is n hat. So the point is that if you're observing the charge in some direction, it's only the component of dipole, which is perpendicular to the line of sight, that's relevant. So you have to project the oscillator dipole along or perpendicular to the line of sight, because photon only has transverse degrees of freedom, electric field only. And there is no longitudinal degree of freedom for photons. In other words, if I see light that's coming from, say, the light bulb there, the electric field I see would be either going this direction, oscillating in this direction, or in this direction. There wouldn't be anyone oscillating along the line of sight. Okay. So if there's a dipole that's in that light bulb that's responsible for the light, the only component of dipole which is perpendicular to the line of sight, that's responsible for radiation. So that's basically, if this angle is theta, so if this electric field is in this direction, this E hat is in this direction, let's say. The only part that matters is the part that's perpendicular. So I have to multiply the acceleration by sine of theta. So this is A squared sine of theta squared. I mean, this could be theta or pi minus theta. It doesn't make a difference. So that's this, I mean, d this thing is AS squared sine of theta squared. And you can easily show that if you integrate it over over the cos theta going from minus 1 to plus 1, you get this 2/3. It's actually, I mean, you can easily do this, see how that works. So, but this is the more general formula. Okay. And we know what the acceleration is. Acceleration is just given here. Acceleration is q e hat divided by m e. Right? So I can calculate the total power that's emitted. So first of all, I mean, so the cross section. So this is dE by dt by d omega, but I can also call it a cross section. So this is called a cross section. Right. So this would be equal to d sigma by dt by d omega times the flux of energy, which is basically, so what is the flux of energy? If electric field is E, anybody remembers? This guy, it's a pointing flux, right? So I think it's somehow I remember it's C over 4 pi times E cross B. I don't remember whether I have the units correct here. Does this make sense? Right, so E squared over 4 pi is energy density. E and B and CJ units have the same units. So energy density times the velocity is the flux. Right. So density times velocity is flux. So I think this is the right thing. So, and then for electric and magnetic field are the same for plane waves. So this is just E squared. Right. Is that right? This is just E squared. There's one is cosine omega t, the other is sine omega t, isn't it? Am I mixing? Or both of them are the same? Are electromagnetic field the same? Or I think that they are, the phases are off by a little bit, like, because one is the time derivative of the other one, right? So if I remember correctly, do I remember this correctly? So this should be E cross B is, well, okay, so it's going to be E squared, right? Which is the same E hat squared that they have there. I think there's a 1/2. But if I remember correctly as well, if you average over, if you do the averaging, I think that's, the 1/2 comes from basically squaring it, squaring the oscillative function and averaging it. Okay, so that's the story. And A is Q E hat over M E, right? So if I just plug in everything, and if assuming that I've used the right 1/2 and such, then I get d sigma by d omega, which I don't have it here. I get the total cross section. No, I do have it here. So I get the total cross section, which is the integral over, don't have a dt here. So the total cross section, which is the Thompson cross section, is gets to be 8 pi r e squared over 3. Which is an RE, incidentally, is just defined as Q squared over MC squared. So you can see how this goes. There is a Q squared here. There is a Q here, which I'm squaring. So I get Q to the fourth. That's this RE squared. There is a 1 over ME here. I squared gives me 1 over ME squared, which is what I got here. This is ME. And you square it. And the factors hopefully work out if I've done this correctly or written it correctly. So this is 6.7 times 10 to the minus 25 square centimeter. This is Thompson cross section. And then d sigma by d omega is, so it has a sine squared of theta, but then if I average over all possible directions. Like if I say the incoming light is unpolarized, so this is knowing this is theta is with respect to particular electric field polarization. But if I average over all possible polarizations of the incident light, then this sinus squared looks a bit different. It looks something like r squared over 2, 1 plus cosine of cosine squared of phi, where phi is this direction, this angle. This angle between the incident light and the outgoing light. So we can use another color for that. So the maximum is when, is that correct? Let's see. The maximum must be when it's perpendicular. So is this the right formula? Observer and light. The maximum must be, right, the maximum is when phi is zero or pi. And the reason for that is if I'm actually sitting here, for example, if phi is pi, then I don't have to project the line of the electric field is already perpendicular to the line of sight. Or if the observer is sitting here, the electric field is already perpendicular to the line of sight. I don't have to project it again. If in this case, though, if the observer sits here, then the electric field, or if we are in this plane, the electric field has to be projected along the line of sight. So it's less than the total electric field that's available to me. And that's consistent with this. So that's what you expect. Most of that's something that you've all learned, that the scattered light is always polarized, and its polarization depends on the scattering angle. But I guess it's not quite the same thing as this. This is related to that. But it just says that if you're perpendicular, you're going to see here, if you're sitting here, and you have some unpolarized light, the light that comes out is going to have polarization in this direction because it cannot have polarization in this direction. So that's related to this. I guess not directly the same thing. This just says that the scattering is maximum along the line of incident light or in the opposite direction, and it's minimum perpendicular. This is, I mean, things we've all seen at some point, I'm guessing. And I think another important fact is that there is no frequency dependence. That's characteristic of Thompson scattering. Okay. Any questions? So this is important. A good part of interaction of light with photons in astrophysics, including, for example, the problem you're doing, is just using Thompson scattering. The main assumption here is that you're only dealing with charged particles or not atoms. And of course, charged particle, it could be protons or other ions, but since this goes as 1 over mass, the lowest mass charged particle is electron, so that's the one that's most important. And that's as long as you just have a plasma, if you don't have any bounded state. So this is the most important, and it's very simple, a scattering process. Yes? To this, okay. So this is the definition of cross section. So the cross section is, literally, the cross section is defined if you have some flux of energy that's multiplied by an area, that should be the rate of absorption of energy, right? So cross section is that area. This is the flux of energy, and this is the amount of energy that's absorbed or. I mean, this is the amount of energy that's radiated, but by conservation of energy, it must be the amount of energy that's absorbed as well, right? Because if the energy is radiated, I mean, electron that inherently doesn't have any energy, it just has its rest mass. So the energy must be coming from the electric field. So that's the idea. So the energy flux of the electric field times the area is the absorption rate. Right. Okay, good. Good, good. Any other questions? So if you don't have a completely ionized, fully ionized plasma, then you have to think, worry about the restoring forces. So, and that's an example of the, a simple way of treating that is a harmonic oscillator. So instead of saying that MEX double dot is QE, you would have, for a harmonic oscillator, you would have MEX double dot, white is a better color, have MEX double dot is QE minus ME omega squared x. Okay. And here this is a restoring force. Now, is that a good model for atom? Not really, because I mean, if you want to model an atom, you have to do it quantum mechanically. I mean, if electrons are not really sitting at the bottom of a harmonic or a square quadratic potential, but this is a good toy model in the sense that it represents the oscillatory nature. It represents the fact that atoms have a ground state. So this harmonic oscillator also has a ground state in the absence of electric field where x is equal to zero. And it has a characteristic frequency, the same way that atoms have characteristic frequencies of transition. So this is a toy model, but it turns out that it actually captures, if you do the quantum calculation, you get the same, essentially the same structures until some factors of order unity. So you can just go through everything that you've done here, but with this extra x factor. And of course, I mean, this is not going to be very hard because, I mean, we know how to solve this equation. It's a linear equation with an oscillatory force. So the way to solve it, you just say ME. If this is omega naught, this is that's one thing. These two don't have to have to be the same frequency. It's the frequency of the electric field and this frequency. Then what you get is ME times minus omega squared plus omega naught squared, x hat is QE hat. And so this is x hat, and this is the amplitude of oscillations. And if I multiply by the omega squared, then I get the acceleration plug into the same thing. So essentially going through the same things, except that instead of omega squareds canceling each other, which they did here for reasons that are they obvious, where the omega squareds cancel. Right, and the point is that there was no omega squared here because all I needed was acceleration, and acceleration was E hat. So I didn't need omega squared. Here, if I get acceleration, acceleration, A hat, would be omega squared or minus omega squared X hat. So it's going to be Q E hat. There is an omega squared here or minus omega squared here divided by ME omega naught squared minus omega squared. So the omegas don't cancel each other anymore. So there is a frequency dependence here. And it turns out that this acceleration goes to infinity if omega is equal to omega naught. And that's, of course, it's a resonance condition, as you know, for a harmonic oscillator. If you force a harmonic oscillator with its natural frequency, then its amplitude is going to grow unexpectedly, basically, in an unbounded way. Now, there is a subtlety here, and the subtlety comes from this oscillation. That comes from the fact that you are losing energy. So this is true if you ignore the radiation reaction or ignore the fact that this oscillating electron is actually radiating energy. So if you actually include the effect of this self force, then you have to, one way to include that is through the a friction term, which is, do I have it written down here? I guess just on dimensional ground, it would be something like ME gamma x dot. And this is just to say that this is not a terribly good model, but this is one way to capture the dissipative effects of radiation. So this electric field is causing this electron to jiggle around. But then the fact that this electron, because of its jiggling around, is radiating light, that causes a way of energy loss. So it's not that it gains energy due to energy electric field, but it loses energy due to radiation. And that, if you go through this, including that factor, then you get something like 1 plus I gamma omega naught here, if I remember correctly. M is all come out. And if you square this to get the total power, then you get something that looks like, am I doing this right? Hopefully I am. So you get the total cross section, which looks the same as 8 pi r naught squared over 3. The prefactors are the same, but then you get, I think I have a typo here in my notes. I'm going to correct this. Omega minus omega naught squared. I guess there's omega naught squared plus gamma squared omega naught squared.
Is that the same R naught?
This is the same R naught. These are just the prefactors that we had. There's 1 over ME and Q to the 4. So this is exactly the same. And you can see that if I let omega naught go to 0, right, then I recover the same thing. Omega naught going to 0 is that there is no restoring force. Okay, now I guess what I have here is a limit of this guy where omega is close to omega naught. So you see this is like a delta function, but not quite, because this peaks as omega gets close to omega naught. And for a small gamma, if this radiation rate is a small, then this is going to be a very sharp peak. And this gamma is like the width of the peaks, or 1 over gamma is the width of the peak. So this thing you could, it's also often approximate if omega is close to omega naught, you could write this as
is
this. Yes.
Is that gamma the regular Lorentz
gamma? No, this has nothing to do with Lorentz gamma. This is called dampening, I think it's called dampening coefficient or something like that. I forgot.
So in the previous equation, it says.
Right, I forgot what it's called, but it has a good name. It's something like damping coefficient, I think that's what it's called. Yeah, it's damping coefficient. And you can calculate what it is, right? Damping coefficient. Let me just write down what it is. So gamma, if you define this, gamma, come back. Gamma is 2/3 omega naught squared R naught over C. And the way you find it is basically because based on what I said is we know the rate of energy loss, which is the same as the so it sounds like it's a bit of an iterative or approximate way of calculating it, but you can ignore this. Well, actually, no, you cannot ignore this. So you assume that there is a gamma here. You, from this cross section, you calculate how much energy is lost, right? And that should be basically due to this term. Right? So you equate those to each other, and that tells you what gamma is. Right. Somebody had a question. Yes.
So is that magnitude in the A hat in the denominator section?
No, this is a bracket. It's a curly bracket.
So it's complex.
Yes, a complex. Yeah, absolutely. So these are all complex. See, I started from complex. Right. Yeah. So that's good, and that's what you expect, right? If you have, because this has one derivative, then when you take the derivative, you get E, you get an I here. Good. And these complex coefficients are always a sign of damping, as you've seen. So if this goes to 0, and I mean, it's generally true for dispersion relations that if they're real, then there is no dissipation. But if there's a complex part, there's an imaginary part that sign of dissipation. Okay, so this is all there is. This is harmonic oscillator. In the limits, if you're only interested in close to omega, you can replace omega by omega naught, and this looks kind of simpler. This particular part. This becomes approximately omega naught to the 4th. That's what I have in my notes. and there is omega minus omega naught squared and omega plus omega naught, so that's 4 omega naught squared plus gamma squared omega naught squared. And here is omega naught to the 4 squared, omega naught squared, and these cancel. So this is known as a Lorentzian profile. Sorry, the squared, there's a 4 here, plus gamma squared. It's known as Lorentzian profile. I actually don't know which one is exactly called Lorentzian. Is this one or this one? I think this one is called Lorentzian profile, this particular form. This is if omega is close to omega naught. Which is, I mean, what really matters, because if you, this is very small if you go far away. Lorentzian. And this is the natural shape of lines. If you look at, you see emission lines that are or emission line or absorption lines in spectrum of stars, or the gas that's emitting here in this this fluorescent light, or any other gas that you see. If you see emission and absorption, it has this profile. And it's kind of funny because we derived this from classical calculations, and the process is really a quantum transition, but it turns out it looks like this, at least close to the transition. Another interesting thing is you can see from here, so this is a limit of close to the line. So this is these profiles, this is how they look, they're very sharply peaked. Let's call this whatever d sigma. So if I want to look at d sigma by d omega, so this is the function of frequency now, and it's very sharply peaked, and the width is 1 over omega. And you see, so gamma is much less than omega, so this is omega naught, the peak. And this is a calculation we did before, right? This 2/3 is the same 2/3 that we had up here. Gamma over omega naught is roughly omega naught R naught, which is divided by C, which is basically how fast the electron is moving relative to the speed of light. So if this electron is very non-relativistic, then it's going to be a very narrow transition. Gamma is going to be tiny. So omega naught R naught is just, it's just a typical size. I mean, R naught is not really the distance that the electron is traveling, though we should have that in mind. But you get the idea that there is the 1 over c here, and this is something like a velocity. So if this is a small, if you have an non-relativistic situation, then that is a small. So Re, this is, in fact, something you might have heard about. This is a classical radius of electron. It's related also to the size of an atom. Does anybody remember how it's related to this? I think it's like 1 over alpha times this, or alpha times the size of an atom, if I remember correctly. It's smaller than the size of an atom. It's obviously smaller than the size of an atom, because the size of an electron, 1 over me, is smaller than the size of an atom. This is smaller than that by qs squared, because this is just alpha, right? So in natural units. So this classical radius of electron, does anybody know what it is? I mean, what is the physical interpretation? Why is it called classical radius of electron? So there is a radius at which the electrostatic energy of electric field of an electron becomes equal to its rest mass, or rest mass times c squared. That's known as the classical radius of electron. So that's the radius at which you cannot trust classical electromagnetism anymore, because if as a smaller radii, there's more energy in electric field than there is rest mass. Of course, the way in quantum mechanics this is resolved is that electron is not a point. Electron is is a field, and then there is no real divergence there. So you shouldn't really think of electron as a classical particle. So here we are not really thinking about that interpretation. I guess these are all REs here, by the way. Have REs. Right, I have. No, I guess I call them R-naught, sorry, in my notes. Sorry, they are R-naught. I mean, it's just my notation. I guess some places they're called REs. But here they're just the constant of proportionality. And so I guess the meaning of this is, in terms of cross-section, is that if you can think of a light interacting with an electron as light hitting some object of a finite size, and that size is just the size of this classical radius. So, I mean, it's not a terribly deep interpretation. It's just something to have in mind. That's basically the radius at which electrostatic energy becomes comparable to the mass. That happens to be the radius at which, when photons get through, they're going to be absorbed by the electrons. Okay. Good. Any questions so far? So now, this F12. Now, I think you already should see the resemblance between these two formulas, between this formula and this formula. And F12 is basically order one Fudge factor. So can we see the resemblance between these two? So pi q squared over, the dimensions are not working out very well. So let's see, am I missing some dimensions here? Or are they working out? No, maybe they are working out. I think F12 and gamma should be up. Sorry, what's that?
No, but you said that.
Right, F12 is dimensionless, right? So, for some reason I hadn't written this down here, but basically, so this is the delta function. So if I integrate over this sigma over frequency, d nu, this gives me, this gives me, let's say, something of order alpha F12 divided by ME. So I'm doing it in natural units now. And here, if I integrate over frequency down here, so this is, I shouldn't call this sigma t, I should call it sigma harmonic oscillator. Integral sigma harmonic oscillator, the omega, let's say. And I think my units are a little bit twisted here.
Well, one's in radio frequency, one's in.
Right, so that's the other two pi. I'm not worried too much about those. But I think, my units are a little bit twisted here because this cross section. Okay, good. So I shouldn't be integrating because this is actually cross section. I guess I can integrate. I think that's fine. This is fine, yeah, right. So if I integrate this thing, this has 1 over, as I derived here, this is dimensionless, right? So if I integrate over omega, I get something like the width of that guy times, let's see, so I get whatever the coefficient I have down out here is R naught squared times omega naught, let's see, omega naught squared integral d omega of omega minus omega naught squared plus, there's a 4 here, plus gamma squared. Right. So, if I do this integral, I get something that's of order, I want to say 1 over gamma, right? I think it's 1 over gamma. No, sorry, of order 1 over gamma. So this would be something R naught squared omega naught squared over gamma. And gamma, I already have it here. Here. So it's R naught squared, omega naught squared, divided by omega naught squared. Again, I mean, this is natural units. R naught. So I just get R naught. Good. So everything matches. So R naught, remember the definition was Q squared over MEC squared. Well, C is one in this unit. So this F12, so these two are essentially the same formula, right? So so this is Q squared over ME. This is Q squared over ME. So the classical calculation gives you the all the dependencies up to this numerical factor, up to this dimensionless factor that you can actually get from the quantum calculation. And this is why it's called the oscillator strength, that for a classical oscillator, this is 1. But for a quantum oscillator, it could be much less than that. So F12 is usually, so that's the, maybe I should write down here, F12 usually less than 1, or could be much less than 1. And if F12 is 1 or of order 1 for classical oscillator, classical. Okay. Okay, good. Everything makes sense? Questions? No questions? Somebody had a question. Yes. Well, yeah.
There are the units.
Delta function has units, right? So, of course, I mean, natural units, you just have units of energy. So the sigma is 1 over energy squared. Length is 1 over energy. Sigma is area, which is 1 over energy squared. So there's 1 over energy here, and then there's 1 over frequency here. Exactly. Right. So delta function has units of 1 over its argument. So the argument is frequency. So it has units of 1 over frequency, which is 1 over energy, right? So it's 1 over energy squared. So it's 1 over energy, 1 over energy is 1 over energy squared. Good, good. So, good. So that's, okay, so another interesting thing here is, we can also see here why the sky is blue. Right? Why is the sky blue? Can you look at this? Yes, Manasur, you want to say?
So because of the cross-section,
right, but so how come, so how can we see from this formula that, I mean, the sky should be blue?
So I think as the sunlight comes, mm-hmm. So more of the blue light gets
it. So this cross-section is bigger for blue light because, how can we see that? Right, good. So at low frequency, so this has to do on which, it depends on which side you are, right? So, I mean, close to the resonance, there is this structure. But if you're far from the resonance, then it depends on which side you are. So if you are in the red side at low frequencies, then these things become constant in the denominator. Omega is a small, so it's just a constant. So it goes as omega to the fourth, which is 1 over wavelength to the fourth. So the blue light, they say its wavelength is, say 4,000 angstrom. Red light is 6,000 or 7,000 angstrom. So let's say a factor of 2, let's say. So there's a 2 to the fourth. So it's factor of the cross section for blue light is 16 times, let's say, bigger than cross section for red light. So that's, this is, you can also see that the sky is blue here, right? Good. Good, okay. Great. So there's a lot you can learn just from these simple classical calculations without even getting into quantum mechanics. However, there are some places that, I mean, there are some limitations. I talked about this F12. So F12 is I mean, if you're talking about really non-classical transitions, this FM2 can be very different from one. It's like, for example, these hyperfine transitions, which depends on the dipole, not the dipole of the electron, but rather the magnetic dipole rather than electric dipole. So the magnetic dipole of proton, as well as electron. The other one is when you're actually dealing with very energetic photons. And so remember the rule of thumb that, so what was the rule of thumb? If the number of photons become of order one, then you cannot trust classical physics, okay? So how can we see, based on that, how can we see where this argument fails? Where the classical physics for electromagnetism fails here. So here we assume that you have classical electric field, and it turns out that fails. I can write down the criterion for you, and then you can tell me how we can see that. So the criterion is that if the frequency of electric field, light basically, h bar omega, becomes comparable or bigger, let's put it the other way. If this frequency is much less than the mass of the electron, then you can use classical ENM. So how can we see that? So this should be related to the number of photon arguments. But I guess, I mean, the one way to see that is that if this frequency becomes comparable to, so here we are assuming that there is a coherent electric field that's oscillating. So that coherent electric field is a superposition of a lot of photons. It's oscillating and it's moving the electron. However, if the energy of one of those photons is comparable to the energy or the rest mass of the electron, then if one of those photons is absorbed, forget about lots of them, just even if one of them is absorbed, then your electron is moving relativistically, right? Because, I mean, here this is a non-relativistic equation. But if one of those photons is absorbed, then I cannot use this equation. So as soon as one is absorbed, forget about lots of them if even one is absorbed. So that's a shortcoming. And basically it's, so that tells you that you cannot really trust this, use this equation for lots of photons or a superposition of a lot of photons, because even when, as soon as one of them is absorbed by the electron is moving relativistically and it cannot use this equation. So that's known as,
well, yes? Can you say that there's like three orders of magnitude more photons than particles?
In cosmology, you mean?
Oh.
Right, now in cosmology, there are 10 orders of magnitude more photons than particles, right? So that means that, right, so that's true. But of course, that's for cosmological, the cosmic microwave background. But then if you might happen to have, I mean, other photons that are much more energetic. And in fact, so this is, what is this in MeV? Anybody?
0.5
MeV. So here you're really talking about gamma rays. So if you're talking about gamma rays that are interacting with electrons, then you cannot use the classical Thomson cross-section. This is known as, you've heard about this, what type of a scattering? Starts with a C.
Compton,
good. You just need a small hint, Compton scattering. Which, I mean, Thomson scattering is a particular limit of Compton scattering, you know. And I think all of you have worked out just, I mean, in your special, whenever you first learned about the special relativity, you worked out how the scattering angle is related, the scattering angle of, I guess, what is it? So what you work out is a scattering angle of photon, how is it related to the momentum of the electron, for example, when photon scatters off an electron. This you can get it from just conservation laws, energy and momentum conservation laws. right? So the cross-section, however, you cannot get it from just the conservation laws. Cross-section, in principle, you should do some calculation like this, but you have to do it for a relativistic particle rather than a non-relativistic particle. And in fact, it turns out that if you want to do that calculation and it's a quantum field, you're really talking about a single photon interacting with a single electron. You have to do it in quantum field theory. So we're not going to do that here, but I'm just going to quote the result for you. So d sigma by d omega is, this is for unpolarized, similar to what I had here, what I had down here. So this is known as a Klein-Nishina cross-section, by the way, Klein-Nishina. This is 1/2 of R naught squared. I guess here, this is omega is the frequency of incoming photon. Omega 1 is frequency of outgoing photon. Phi is this angle of incidence, which is the same phi we had up there, out there. Sorry, there's no 1 over 2 here. This omega 1 over omega squared. Omega over omega 1 plus omega 1 over omega. So this omega is for the incident photon. Omega 1 is outgoing. And of course, so for Thomson cross-section, these are the same because of what, I mean, up to this gamma factor, that it's a little bit, I mean, as long as you assume this is a very, very narrow transition, those frequencies are the same. And it's just because if you force an oscillator with some frequency, it's going to oscillate at that frequency just from this equation. And then you're going to emit at that frequency. However, in the relativistic case, these are not the same. And you can remember, I don't have the Compton formula with me. But this is basically the difference of these. This omega 1 minus omega, this is given by something like omega divided by, this is the relative frequency difference. It's given by omega divided by MEC squared, which is just to say, this is basically the redshift effect, right? I think this is the redshift effect. I don't remember whether there is a square root here. I don't think there is a square root here. You can look it up. I don't have it. I don't think I have written it in my notes. Yeah, for some reason, I didn't write it down in my notes. There is an H bar here, which is what we had up here. So the point is that these frequencies, if these frequencies are small, the electron is barely moving. So the frequency of incoming and outgoing photons is the same. But then if this frequency is big, then it's going to give electron a kick. An electron would be moving, so the frequency it's going to be emitting is going to be different from the frequency of incoming guy. And the difference would be of order of energy of photon divided by mass of electron, at least if it's not very big. You can find it in the book, in the textbook. I don't have it with me, but the exact formula. But it's just get it from a special relativity. And then when you find that, you can plug it in here. So when omega 1 is equal to omega, you can say that you reproduce what we had on the left down there. So it's R naught squared over 2 is the same thing. This is 1. This is 2 minus sine squared of 5, which is 1 plus cosine squared of 5. So these are the same. Now, the important thing to notice here is, and I think it's not going to be terribly easy to see this, but this cross-section basically, for fixed electrons at rest, this goes down as at high frequencies. So yeah, I think it's unfortunately, I need to write this formula, and I for some reason I haven't written it down. But what happens is that at high frequencies, the cross section goes down. So the cross section is constant at low frequencies, but as you go to get to high enough frequencies, and I should really have written it down. Maybe I'm going to write it down for you tomorrow. This cross section goes down. So that's what happens for very high energy photons. So high energy photons could get through if easily, even though the lower energy photons may not. There could be other processes that stop high energy photons, but for the Compton scattering, it gets easier. So you get to high energies. So I guess the two more things I'm just going to write down, which you can easily derive from, essentially what I had on the left there is a drag force. So there's a radiation drag force. Which is if you have, you could just do it for a single one or collection of electrons. What is gamma? Why do I have gamma here? I guess gamma is the same gamma, hopefully. Hopefully it's the same gamma. Now I'm a bit confused about whether my gamma, this gamma is the same. Okay, I'm not sure what I don't think it's the same gamma because the dimensions don't quite work out. I mean, the force is, and then I guess the energy, dE by dt, this is the rate of energy loss. Is minus 4/3 sigma t u rad gamma squared v versus c squared times c. But this is just f dot v. So this is basically saying that if you have a gas of radiation and an electron is moving through it, it's going to experience a drag force basically by through this Thompson scattering. And it's going to be in the opposite direction. If you have a isotropic distribution of radiation, it's going to be opposite to the direction. And it's going to experience some loss of energy because it's, if it loses energy to the photons, it could also gain energy because of random kicks. So there's so-called fluctuation dissipation theorem. And this is something you can show actually using this formula. This gamma, I have to figure out. I'm a bit confused by why I have a gamma there. I don't think it has to be there unless these are relativistic. Yeah, okay, I have to figure out. I don't write down what I mean by gamma here. So this fluctuation dissipation theorem. So this says that the combination of these random kicks and energy loss eventually leads to TE being equal to T gamma. So that's to say that if you have this electron that is being randomly kicked by a thermal distribution or blackbody distribution of photons, eventually, so if it's just sitting there at zero energy, then it's going to get some random kicks. If it's moving very fast, it's going to lose momentum because the photons basically, on average, it loses more energy to photons that's moving very fast. And you can guess it from thermodynamics, but there's something I can actually show by following the distribution of electrons, that it eventually reaches an equilibrium distribution where these temperatures are the same. So, of course, for electron, this means that the phase space density is proportional to e to the minus P squared over 2m kT. So this is just the Boltzmann distribution. And for photons, it means they have blackbody distribution. So if you have any distribution that's different from this for electrons, then you follow these calculations, you find that they're gonna equilibrate at T gamma. It could be also be the other way around. If you can calculate if you have a photon distribution in a thermal mass of electrons, what happens to that? That's going to also approach the temperature of electrons. So this is something I believe we're going to derive at some point. I'm not quite sure. In the semester, it's called the Companions equation. Right. Okay. Good. So that's so Thompson scattering and its variants that we've derived can go a long way to model lots of processes that happen in astrophysics. Any questions?
Just about the assignment, is it due tomorrow morning?
Doesn't matter.
So we have till the end of the day?
Well, yes, that's the idea, right? I don't have a particular policy on. I mean, how to, what is it? What is the penalty for being late or such? But I mean, you are graduate students, you don't need, particular policies for that.
I noticed on your website, your link to your lecturers puts you in the assignments.
Yeah, I noticed that too, yeah. So I think the links are mixed up. So, but now you know. I'm gonna try to fix it whenever I get around to it, but yeah. Sorry about that. I think I screwed that up. Thanks, but I mean, you can access both of them. So you just have to click on that. So the link to assignments goes to lecture, and link to the lecture notes goes to assignments.
I think they both go to assignments.
No,
there is.
One, just
yeah, right. No. So it's but one of the lessons that you just have to keep trying different things until you get what you want. And that's how it works in real research, right? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Now I'm on to trying the...